You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
In Green Bay, the fans on the team. Lambeau is more than a field. Lombardi is not just a trophy, but an icon. To carry on for far and breath. This is Title Town. These are the Packers.
From the benches.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to your favorite show. We are From the Benches. A little short-handed tonight, but that's okay. I am Jacob Westendorf, sitting here in the rain, which I guess is not snow, so that's okay, here in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Joined by, with me, as always, is Ross Uglum. Ross, how is North Dakota?
It's fine. We got a nice little forecast upcoming. We're virtually snow-free. Got my car out of the garage. I'm excited, so it's good here.
And due to a battle with employment and a sickness, Ryan Hilsland is not joining us tonight, so we send our best wishes to Ryan. Feel free to tweet him, @Hilsland358. Tell him to get well soon. And speaking of getting well, the Packers are trying to get well at their center position. Obviously, Evan Dietrich Smith will not be the center next season. He signed in Tampa Bay. And Mike McCarthy talked a little bit about trying to find a starting center, whether that was in-house, in the draft. And apparently one option is in free agency. Mike McGlynn, formerly of the Indianapolis Colts, came in for a visit. He plays a little bit of guard, a little bit of center. And if you look at Pro Football Focus, it isn't pretty at all. There are some people, Zach Cruz even said that it would be the equivalent to replacing Scott Wells with Jeff Saturday if they replaced Dietrich Smith with Mike McGlynn. I guess if the numbers are low, meaning they don't pay him a whole lot, I'm okay with having him come in and compete with J.C. Treader. But ultimately, in my opinion at least, in an ideal world, J.C. Treader is the starting center for the Packers next season. I like his game. I like his size. I think he'll add a little bit of nasty to that run game, even more so than they already had, and build a very formidable interior line for that run game going forward. Ross, what do you think about McGlynn and the center situation as a whole? I know McCarthy even mentioned Don Barclay, TJ Lang, kind of just sitting off the cuff, but I think that was more of a in-case-of-emergency type of thing. So thoughts on the center situation and most notably Mike McGlynn visiting Green Bay?
Well, the only thing that I have to say about that is that I'm not – plussed. You would call me nonplussed by this situation. I'm okay with Mike McGlynn if he's going to be the utility inside lineman like Evan Dietrich Smith used to be, like almost like a Gray Rugemer used to be back in the day, you know, because Gray Rugemer wasn't an organic Packer. He came in from somewhere else. I guess what I'm trying to say is if he's replacing Lane Taylor as the eighth offensive lineman and they just want a veteran presence, great. But to have him come in, and take the job from J.C. Treader, take the job from Don Barclay, it's just not productive. It's not a step in any direction that I think the Packers want to be going in. And I think one of the things that really gets you and I excited about Treader or Barclay playing center is their size. I mean, you know, they're both 6'4" or taller, 2 inches taller than, 2 inches taller than EDS ever was. And to that effect, so was McGlynn. But as you said, the Pro Football Focus numbers are not great. He does have some experience starting, but it's not as an effective player. So I'm not really all that excited about this. And I feel pretty confident with the results of the J.C. Treader, Don Barclay showdown at center, if that's what we're, you know, careening towards. I feel pretty confident with it. You know, the Packers have been good at getting production out of low-round guys at this position. Mike Flanagan was a converted tackle that went through a catastrophic injury, and he ended up being a very good center. Scott Wells was a late pick. He was an undersized guy. He ended up being a Super Bowl winning center, and Evan Dietrich Smith was undrafted. So it's not like the team feels like it has to invest a high pick in this position. But to just throw a guy, and, you know, we talked about just a guy. Mike McGlynn is just a guy.
Yeah, I think one thing that you touched on there is one thing I usually like to say in the offseason when it comes to free agents is, you know, can you draft that guy, the guy that you want them to sign? The Packers couldn't draft a guy like Julius Peppers in this year's draft. Even at his advanced age, there just isn't a defensive lineman as tall and as athletic as a Julius Peppers that you know for sure what you're getting out of him and that they could use in a versatile role. A guy like Mike McGlynn, you can draft a guy like Mike McGlynn. There are offensive linemen in the later rounds, especially on the interior. There are some guys who aren't necessarily going to command a high draft pick. And not to shamelessly self-promote myself, but there is a story for those of you that subscribe to the Packer Report. The first week of free agency, I did write a story on some possible options at the center position. That includes in-house and the draft. So feel free to check that out. I'll tweet out the link for you guys as soon as this show gets published. But I think you're right. The Packers don't necessarily feel a need to invest a high pick in the position. The last time they used a marquee sort of method for a center, it was Jeff Saturday, and they signed him as a free agent, and he was horrible. He was so bad he got benched for Dietrich Smith. So, like you said, I'm intrigued by the size, and I think that J.C. Treader has shown some stuff in practices to be the guy. He's a smart kid, so I don't think you have to worry about the lapses. He's an Ivy League kid, so you know he can pick it up. Scored well on the Wonderlic, whatever that's worth. Ultimately, I think, gun to my head right now, J.C. Treader is going to be the starting center in Green Bay, and I'm okay with that. I think they can draft a eighth offensive lineman like you were talking about, somebody to be that swing interior guy. Maybe that's Don Barclay. We'll talk about that here in a little bit with some of the comments that Mike McCarthy made. But one other thing that kind of happened over the weekend, and this wasn't the Packers, or it wasn't over the weekend, it was over the week. This wasn't necessarily the Packers news, but it was in the division. A old nemesis from Minnesota is going to be facing the Packers twice a year once again, and it's Jared Allen. Jared Allen signed a 4-year deal in Chicago. Ross, what were your thoughts on this? I know that he had been linked to Seattle and Dallas, maybe Chicago early on in the process. I'll say I was surprised.
Yeah, I just had to laugh. You know, he talks so much about being interested in winning. Well, the guy, you know, was involved with the Denver Broncos real early on, and they chose to go with DeMarcus Ware. I don't know if that was a money thing or what it was. I doubt it, you know, seeing as Ware got more money than Allen ended up taking. Then he got involved in the Seattle Seahawks, and then to go to a team like Chicago, it's just clear that it was about the money. I did read a report that Oakland was offering $1 million more a year. And that's different. You know, that's Oakland. That is a flat-out money grab. That's a cesspool of a situation, and it's very obvious, at least at this point in that franchise's development, that if you are going to go there as a free agent, it's because you're getting paid. But I think the Chicago thing was kind of a money grab, too. I don't think it's really realistic that, you know, Jay Cutler's going to lead you to a Super Bowl title. Allen, like Peppers, you know, is a player in sharp decline. And I understand why they made the sign-in, just the same as I understand why Green Bay signed Julius Peppers. Now, Jared Allen is not the same athlete as Julius Peppers, and I might be biased, but I kind of feel like, you know, Peppers is probably going to age better than Allen as far as his game. What I will say is that I think he needs his snap counts reduced, and I think that's what's going to happen in Chicago. He played a ton of snaps in Minnesota. He was a very good player, and he was a very durable player, but they played him all the time. I think what you'll see in early downs in Chicago is the first two defensive ends that they signed, Lamar Houston and Willie Young, and then as the down and distances progress, or as the game progresses and passing situations become more prevalent, I really think you're going to see Allen and maybe even, you know, their former first-round pick, Shay McClellan, the bane of Aaron Rodgers, come in and do some pass rushing. I wouldn't be surprised to see Lamar Houston shift inside and rush from a defensive tackle position, you know, during that. They're in that kind of scheme, and I think they're going to be able to maybe take his rep count down, and that'll maybe reverse this this decline that his game seems to be in. As will, you know, as the same thing applies to Julius Peppers. I think, you know, the Bears used him on, I think, 81 or 82% of their downs, and I think you're going to see that number closer to 50 or 55% in Green Bay, and I think, you know, that'll improve Peppers' production as well.
One reason I do like the signing for Chicago is I know that, you know, being from Bear Country, obviously I hear a lot about the things that they're doing. And the one question I kept asking those guys was, you know, I know you've signed two defensive ends, but where's the consistent pass rush going to come from? You know, Lamar Houston, he's a good player, good against the run, but he's not that dynamic pass rusher that you're looking for to replace when they were trying to replace Julius Peppers. Same thing with Willie Young, more of a run defender. I don't know how good Willie Young is. I wonder if some of his production has to do with the fact that the Lions had those two big beasts in the middle. Jared Allen, with a reduced snap count and as a situational pass rusher, I think he's going to do good things in Chicago. I still think that Chicago's defense needs help in the middle, both on the defensive line, at the linebacker position, and in the secondary. I think they still need a cornerback. I know they re-signed Peanut Tillman, who's one of my favorite players. It might be sacrilegious to say as a Packers fan, but I do like Charles Tillman. But I also think it's time for him to be bumped inside, play that slot corner like what Charles Woodson used to do. And they need a guy with some better speed on the outside, maybe some more coverage skills. And they still need two safeties, in my opinion. I know that they signed Ryan Mundy. I think he's more of a special teams guy, and so is M.D. Jennings. Obviously, we know all about M.D. Jennings around here. So the Bears, it's a good signing. They've done some good things in free agency. And they have put together at least what I would call a competent defensive line, but they still have some work to do. And if you had to ask me right now, I know a lot of people try to point out who's ahead of who in the offseason. I still think that the Packers' defense is comfortably ahead of Chicago's if there's a relative health situation. If the Packers are relatively healthy, their defense is better than Chicago's is right now. And I think the draft will only improve those things. But moving on from that, we're going to go behind the bench right now, and this week was the annual NFL meetings, and Mike McCarthy had a ton to say to reporters. Kudos, Jason Wilde, Mike Vandermoss, and my personal favorite, Rob Domofsky. You guys did a hell of a job this week. I'm sure you're listening to this show, so you guys did a great job on tweeting out McCarthy's comments. And what seems to happen every single offseason in Green Bay, or just around the NFL, there seems to be new buzzwords, if you will. They're the terms that people use all the time. You know, some past examples include like arm talent or tantalizing skill sets or things of that nature. This offseason for the Packers, the buzz term has been the, quote, one-year prove-it deal, which what B.J. Raji eventually got, and the elephant defensive end. Now, that sheds some light into what exactly the Packers' defense is going to look like next season. I know we've speculated on this a lot. And it's pretty much coming to fruition. McCarthy basically confirmed the Packers' defense will be different next season scheme-wise. It's still going to have a lot of 3-4 concepts, but it's not going to be straight traditional 3-4 like it has been. He mentioned the elephant defensive end role, which is a multiple position. It's a hybrid position between a defensive end and a linebacker. He mentioned Mike Neal, Nick Perry, and obviously Julius Peppers as a spot, or as people to play that position. What do you think about McCarthy's comments as far as the elephant defensive end goes, and I'm personally excited to see the scheme change. As a coach myself, I'm a big proponent of fitting your scheme to your players instead of fitting your players to your scheme. And I think the Packers are finally doing that with the addition of Julius Peppers, moving to more multiple fronts, but they still have guys like B.J. Raji and LaTroy Guyon if they want to play that big wide body defensive tackle in the 3-4 base type of scheme. They're still talking about Ryan Pickett and Johnny Jolly. He mentioned there was interest in both of those guys. I don't know if both will be back or not. But what do you think about the defensive line specifically as far as McCarthy's comments went?
Well, you know, I remember you kind of, we had been in this discussion before about whether you thought it was coach speak or whether there was going to be actual, you know, change this year. I kind of was leaning more towards the actual change thing, and I went on a little Twitter, not a rant, but a little explosion a couple of days ago that got some feedback about, you know, kind of what Mike McCarthy was saying, and somebody did a fantastic article for Sports Illustrated, I think it was, kind of defining what the Packers were going to do with Julius Peppers, and it's not only what the Packers are going to do with Julius Peppers, but I think what they're also going to do with alike athletes, and nobody is the same athlete that Julius Peppers is. He's actually kind of a once-in-a-lifetime talent, but Chris Burke really broke down what's going to happen. He compared him to Charles Haley in the old 49er defense, and he compared him to the Michael Bennett role in the current Seattle Seahawks defense. As you said, the buzzword or the term for the position is elephant, and I believe that the Seahawks use the term Leo, you know, in their terminology. Basically, what it ends up being is a 4-3 under formation with the strong side end, you know, really playing a wide outside the tackle, and he still has his hand, you know, in the ground. The other three linebackers are playing in two-point stances. It ends up looking like a 3-4. It ends up, you know, you guys basically come from the same places if you have a five-man rush, but the alignment is a little bit different, and the responsibilities are a little bit different. I was listening to Green and Gold today the other day, and Bill Johnson was really concerned about how the Packers were going to use Peppers out on that edge. And he was saying, you know, if I'm the quarterback, I'm just going to audible and run something at Peppers, run a pass over his head, you know, whatever. Well, first of all, he's 6'7", and that isn't going to work great. But that's not his responsibility in this new defense. He's not supposed to cover the pass over there. You know, it's whether it's the safety or the strong side inside linebacker, whatever, it's a different defense. It's very similar to the one that that Seattle runs, and I really think they are going to try and use Julius Peppers in Michael Bennett fashion. Now, I don't think they're going to lean on him as much as the Seahawks lent on Michael Bennett. I think that they're going to use these guys that used to be defensive linemen, and that's what I meant when I said like athletes. They're going to use Mike Neal in this elephant position. They're going to use Nick Perry in this elephant position. They're going to use Julius Peppers in this elephant position. And they're going to have the smaller guys like Clay Matthews, Andy Malumba, Nate Palmer, you know, draft pick X, in a standing up rush as well. I'm really excited about it. I think that, I don't have any problem with the traditional 3-4. I mean, we won a Super Bowl with it. That's great, but we've been trying to draft these tweener guys and pick up these tweener guys in undrafted free agency. You know, like I said, Andy Malumba and Nate Palmer. Well, Andy Malumba and Nate Palmer were both converted defensive linemen. We keep drafting and acquiring these rangy guys that were trying to make outside linebackers, when really the only true 3-4 outside linebacker on the team is Clay Matthews. And instead of, you know, trying to fit these square pegs into these round holes, just taking the talents that made them, you know, first round picks, second round picks, Nick Perry, Mike Neal, and letting them do what they're comfortable with. And I think that's kind of what's going to happen. And I'm excited about it. And you'll actually see that, you know, in my column, my Football Friday column that comes out. Well, actually, by the time you're hearing this, it probably came out this morning. So take a look at that. I'm going to do a little bit of graphics and kind of actually show what the hell it is that I'm actually talking about.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm excited for the versatility of it all. I mean, the Packers, Brian Caravu from Cheesehead TV speculated on the idea of maybe using Clay Matthews as an inside linebacker more. Now, not strictly as an inside linebacker. Don't freak out. He's still going to rush the passer a lot. But having Clay in there, using guys like Mike Neal, Julius Peppers, Nick Perry in a variety of ways, and not even forgetting about the defensive line. Dayton Jones is going to have a bigger role next year. I loved him coming into last year's draft, so obviously I'm still excited about him going into next year. Mike Daniels emerged, and I'm starting to get the sense that B.J. Raji is going to have a bigger, better year next year. I don't know that he's going to be as good as he was in 2010 from a sack perspective, but I do think he's going to play better. He's going to push the pocket. I think he's going to have his motivation down and not get stuck on so many blockers. Sticking on the defensive side of the ball, too, obviously the defensive line is going to be fun to watch, or at least in my opinion it is. That all remains to be seen, barring relative health. But the other thing that was brought up that kind of was an eye-opener to me, at least, was Mike McCarthy said that Micah Hyde spent too much time on the sidelines last year, and they are going to find any way that they can to make him an every-down player. So that means he'll play slot corner, dimeback, safety. They'll move him all around the defense. Big roles for Micah Hyde coming in next year. The only issue that I have with that statement, I'm fine with Hyde getting more reps. He played better than I thought he would. Struggled early, but did come on late. Got his hands on a ball that probably should have been intercepted in the playoffs, but ultimately that was a play that he wouldn't have even been anywhere near the ball early in the season. So I'll give him credit there. The only problem I have with the statement is, and we talked about this before the show, if the Packers go into next season with the idea that Micah Hyde is the solution to their safety issues, then they're in trouble because they're one injury away at the cornerback position from needing Micah Hyde to play there more. And then that would mean having a guy like Sean Richardson or Chris Banjo playing next to Morgan Burnett. And as you tweeted yesterday, if Morgan Burnett gets hurt, it's DEFCON 1. I mean, all hell is going to break loose. They need another guy back there that knows the safety position. Otherwise, it's just another experiment, similar to what they tried to get away with last year in a gamble with MD Jennings and Jerron McMillan platooning, trying to figure out who was the best man for that job, and it turned out neither one was. So what do you think about McCarthy's comments on Hyde and how it affects the safety position going forward?
Yeah, Jacob, I you know, that kind of started my little Twitter rant that I referenced earlier. I said I don't want to read too much into a March interview. Speaking of the March interviews, I want to give a quick shout to my buddy Jeff and his dad, John. They were in Florida on a family vacation, and John actually ended up buying Coach McCarthy and his table breakfast and getting to meet with them, and they sent me a picture, and I was super jealous. So a big shout to those guys, and actually big shout to Coach Mack, because apparently he kind of sat and BS and talked football with those guys, and supposedly is one of the nicest guys around, and I really think that's kind of something that everybody says of Coach Mack, is that he's pretty awesome. But from his actual interviews, he really did stress that he wants to use Casey Hayward and Micah Hyde more. I think that stems a lot from the way that the team was so successful in using Charles Woodson, especially later in his career when he really did move into that slot and just became a defensive all-around pain in the ass. I mean, he was just doing everything, and I think they believe that Micah Hyde, with his tackling ability, and Casey Hayward, with his ball skills, have the ability to impact the game in similar ways that Charles Woodson did. I'm not saying they are the next Charles Woodson. In my opinion, I think it's going to be bore out that Charles Woodson's a Hall of Fame football player, and I don't know as though we know that Casey Hayward or Micah Hyde is heading to the Hall just quite yet. But I do think that And as much as it bothers me, and it's going to bother a lot of other fans, I do think that their lack of attention to the safety position has a lot to do with the idea that they can play that corner Oki that they used to play with Woodson with Hyde, where they can have three corners and a safety out there in their base defense. And, you know, that, as far as I was concerned, you know, that was fine when the third corner was Charles Woodson and the one safety was Nick Collins. You know, we're not in that mode anymore. You know, we have a weaker safety in Morgan Burnett, and as I said, I really like Casey Hayward and I really like Micah Hyde, but they're not Charles Woodson either. I would like to see the team address the safety position, but I also agree. I think Micah Hyde has a chance to be a very, very solid player. I think he operates in the slot really well. You know, I think the Packers have three guys who can play outside. You know, I think that Tremont and Sam Shields and Devon House all have the skill set to be effective outside corners. And I think that, you know, you could really cause a lot of problems in nickel or in dime with Hayward and Hyde. Hyde specifically, because I think that Hyde's tackling ability affords you the ability to play dime in situations where you would normally play nickel. His ability to make tackles and be a really solid tackler with his size, if you can afford to have six defensive backs on the field and not get gashed in the run game, why not have six defensive backs on the field? I agree with Coach McCarthy, but I really, really do hope that they address this safety position and don't just assume that Burnett and Hyde are going to be able to handle it, because as I wrote on Twitter as well, this is all well and good, but if Morgan Burnett goes down with a serious injury, it is instant DEFCON 1. I mean, we are screwed.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that. It'll be definitely interesting to watch going forward as far as the safety situation goes. One thing I do like about the versatility of Micah Hyde and Casey Hayward, as you mentioned, the Packers have a hell of a lot of possibilities at the cornerback position. They can do a lot of things. And I understand the appeal of wanting Micah Hyde to play safety for that versatility reason. But, again, like you said, if Morgan Burnett gets hurt, it's DEFCON 1. And in my opinion, leaving Hyde as your, quote, starting safety would be just another experiment. That's why I'm pro Calvin Pryor, haha Clinton Dix, Jimmy Ward, Deion Buchanan, take your pick. But the Packers got to have one of those guys on their roster going into next season. The biggest news on the offensive side of the ball out of McCarthy's comments were the left tackle and right tackle situation. Obviously, going into the season last year, the plan was to have Brian Bulaga be the left tackle. Josh Sitton moved over from right to left guard. TJ Lang moved to the right side. And they were going to have Don Barclay and Marshall Newhouse fight it out for the right tackle position. Well, the right tackle position ended up being a battle between Barclay and Newhouse, but the left tackle turned out to be David Bakhtiari because Brian Bulaga tore his ACL in family night. So Bakhtiari played well last season. He wasn't great by any stretch, but a godsend compared to what could have been after Bulaga went down. So Bakhtiari was announced as the left tackle for next season, and I think that was the right move. So Brian Bulaga is going to kick back over to the right side, which is okay because he never really played in a live game at the left tackle position. He's a solid right tackle when he's healthy. The problem is the last two seasons, he hasn't been healthy. He got hurt midseason against the Arizona Cardinals, didn't come back. That's the last regular season game he played in because he got hurt in the preseason last year. This creates a variety of possibilities for the Packers at the tackle position. Bakhtiari, obviously, your left tackle. Bulaga, your right tackle, and then you've got two guys, Don Barclay being one. He could be the starting center, but that's another story. Played tackle in the past. Don Barclay is one. Derek Sherrod, first-round pick, is the other one. Derek Sherrod will be your swing tackle, play on the left and the right side, similar to what Marshall Newhouse was last year. And anytime you have somebody doing that job other than Marshall Newhouse, it's an upgrade. One thing that I do know right now with this situation, the Packers have depth on their offensive line. And that's something that I don't know that they've had in quite some time. I mean, last year, if one of the tackles got hurt, the next guy up was Marshall Newhouse. And Marshall Newhouse is, well, for lack of a better term, horrible. I don't have a nicer way to put that. I'm sorry. But what do you think of the tackle situation? Did they make the right move? And one other, you know, storyline that doesn't go in here, Brian Bulaga's in the final year of his contract, and making him a right tackle makes him more affordable. Because paying left tackles, you pay a premium for those. You don't pay a premium for right tackles. And I think that this will help the Packers in their negotiations because he is their right tackle now. He's not their left tackle. And if Bakhtiari plays better than he did last year and you'd expect him to improve with a year in the strength and conditioning program, he's not going to be the left tackle because Bakhtiari will be. What are your thoughts on the tackle situation as far as depth and the decision that was ultimately made?
Well, I wrote an article on Tuesday as soon as the news broke, and I'm pretty positive about it. As I wrote in my article about the whole offensive line switch last summer, I was nonplussed about it. I kind of thought that Bulaga could be an average left tackle, above average left tackle, maybe make a Pro Bowl left tackle. As a right tackle, though, I think he projects as a possible all-pro. I really do think that Brian Bulaga, with his skill set and his frame and his ability to get out and run block, I think he can be one of the best four or five right tackles in football for the next 6 or 7 years. I don't think that was ever going to be a possibility at left tackle. Now, I certainly don't think that David Bakhtiari is going to be an all-pro at left tackle. I don't think he has the physical tools necessary to accomplish that. But what this does do is it completely solidifies three spots on the offensive line, and it solidifies them with above-average players. According to Pro Football Focus, and I know it's not the gospel, but quite frankly, with my untrained eye, it's the best metric that I have for offensive line play. I don't know what you use, but their stuff's about as good as it gets for me. Josh Sitton ranked second, and T.J. Lang ranked 15th in total guard play last year. All things considered, there's 64 open spots to start at guard in the National Football League. So if you have the second best one and the 15th best one, you're doing pretty damn good. Add that to Brian Bulaga, and you got three or five spots handled. That brings in two open competitions. The competition at center, as the roster stands now, is between Don Barclay and between J.C. Treader. And the open competition at left tackle is between David Bakhtiari and Derek Sherrod. Now, I might be the only one still on the Derek Sherrod bandwagon. In fact, I might, you know, currently be driving it by myself. But as I wrote, Derek Sherrod is a police sketch artist rendition of a perfect left tackle. 6'6", 310 pounds, 36-inch arms, athletic, played in the SEC, didn't give up his sack the last two seasons. I mean, they drafted him in the first round to be their left tackle of the future. He and Bulaga were supposed to do this thing together for a decade. I like David Bakhtiari. I think he can be an average to above average NFL left tackle, but if Derek Sherrod gets all the way back and reaches his immense potential, he just flat out has more talent. I'm excited about the move. I am. I think that it really brings at least three-fifths of the offensive line into being above average when a lot of Packer fans would have told you over the last 3 years that we had the worst offensive line in the league. Now, a lot of that was overblown. I mean, that was never true. Their offensive line's a lot worse than Green Bay. But the fact that our star quarterback was getting hit and the fact that our star quarterback loved to hold on to the ball and would rather take a sack than, you know, give up a quick interception, those things reflected negatively on the offensive line. I really think this gives the offensive line a chance to be a strength for the team as opposed to a weakness, and I'm excited about it.
Yeah, one thing that you mentioned that, you know, I had kind of thought about but wasn't really sure, you kind of talked me into it, the idea that there could be a competition at the left tackle position. I know David Bakhtiari played well last season, but Derek Sherrod is a former first-round pick, and regardless of what any NFL team will ever say, that pedigree does matter to some point because the Packers, let's just face it, they're going to have to see, because this is a contract year for Derek Sherrod, they're going to have to see what they have in their first-round pick. They invested a first-round pick in him, and like you said, he's a cookie-cutter left tackle. I mean, he's tall, he's got big hands, he's strong. And I know Bakhtiari played well, but like you said, Sherrod has more talent. It's just a matter of if he has more health at this point, which remains to be seen. I think that's something that will be fun to watch come training camp. I know that's something when I come up for training camp next year that I will have my eyes on right away. A couple other small tidbits that McCarthy talked about. First of all, he said he wanted to bring Matt Flynn back. I think with Ross being the only one here, I don't think we have to go through his man crush on Matt Flynn anymore. I'm all for it. I like Scott Tolzien, sort of, kind of, actually not really, but there's no reason for Scott Tolzien to be the unquestioned backup quarterback going into next season. And then he said that he wanted to add a guy in the draft, said he thought they needed four quarterbacks in camp and three on the active roster. So maybe they learned their lesson from last year. You know, Rodgers gets hurt. Seneca Wallace is the only option they have. And the other one is that they're still in negotiations with John Kuhn and that he would like to bring John Kuhn back. With the re-signing of James Starks and the talk of an injury that's still lingering as far as a neck injury with Jonathan Franklin, makes me wonder about Franklin's health going forward. Obviously, they didn't say anything about that because they never do, which is fine. I don't know that John Kuhn is necessarily out the door. If you had to, I think John Kuhn is to fullback what Matt Flynn is to quarterback. They're only valuable in Green Bay. So I think John Kuhn will eventually be back. It'll be a deal probably just under $1 million. Maybe a mil or two just for respect purposes. But Ross, what are your thoughts here on the Flynn situation as far as quarterbacks go going forward and having four on the roster in the preseason and obviously John Kuhn as well?
I like it. I like having, you know, a young guy to push Tolzien. I think that Flynn should come back. Obviously, we don't need to get into a situation like we were in last year. I don't really feel a need to spend a top 100 pick on a quarterback that you would feel would have the talent to come in if Rodgers did get hurt. So I think Flynn is a much better option, especially if it's going to be on the cheap. And I think it is going to be on the cheap because I think, as you said, and as I keep saying, he's a system quarterback. Well, fine, whatever. That's our system. He's our system quarterback. And the rest of the league has seen what he can do in their system. And unfortunately for him, it isn't very much. So, I think Flynn will be back. I'm not so sure if John Kuhn will be back. It depends on the way they want to make up the roster, to be honest with you. I really do think that all four tailbacks that, you know, have been drafted by the Packers, well, I guess Gwan Harris wasn't drafted. I'm trying to exclude Michael Hill here. The four tailbacks, the four main tailbacks, Jonathan Franklin, Eddie Lacy, James Starks, and Dewan Harris are all going to make the team. Well, not a lot of teams carry four tailbacks now. Not a lot of 3-4 defensive teams carry eight defensive linemen like we did last year either, so I think there is going to be some flexibility. I just don't know where it's going to be. You know, this roster's always had weird makeups. One year we kept five tight ends. One year we kept three fullbacks. I don't really know what it's going to be like, but I have a hard time believing that the team would bring back John Kuhn if they thought there was a realistic chance that they would just end up cutting him at the end of camp. And maybe that's just me being sentimental and really thinking, like, that it would, that they would have his best interest in mind like that. But I just don't think that – I think it, basically this is what I'm saying. If he signs with the team, he's going to make the team. If he signs with the team, he'll break camp with the team. And as bad as it sounds, I don't really think I want them to. I think that McCarthy, in his comments, talking about how he wants to make all of those backs, three down backs, was kind of trying to make it sound like Kuhn didn't need to be the third down back, which is probably good because as a third down back, he's fine as a blocker, but he's not a threat with the ball in his hands. You know, I'd much rather an outlet pass get swung to Dewan Harris or an outlet pass get swung to Jonathan Franklin than I would John Kuhn. And I think Ryan Taylor and Andrew Corliss can more than make up for him as a blocker, especially if we're going to run a lot of this offense out of the shotgun. I'm not going to be opposed to retaining John Kuhn, but at this, I just don't think I see the point.
Yeah, you're talking about at the end of training camp, you could be deciding between John Kuhn and, say, Jonathan Franklin or Dewan Harris. I mean, who would you rather have between those guys? I think you're onto something with those McCarthy comments of wanting those guys to all be three-down backs. I think that they were trying to get rid of Kuhn last year, hoping that Jonathan Franklin or somebody like that would emerge. Nobody ever did, and Kuhn ended up making the biggest block of the season. So I'm with you. As bad as it sounds, I don't know that I want John Kuhn back. Like you said, if he makes the roster, or if he signs with the team, I think he makes the team. I don't think they'll sign him and then just cut him later. But the thing working in the Packers' favor is, like I said, John Kuhn, in my opinion, is only valuable as a Packer. One final thing. Obviously, news broke from the Green Bay Press Gazette that the Seattle Seahawks failed JerMichael Finley on his physical. Bob McGinn has talked about how that JerMichael was 2 months away from being cleared. And Mike McCarthy made some comments about how they're in a kind of a holding pattern with him. Just a couple quick thoughts on this. I think it's starting to sound more and more like JerMichael Finley is going to be either retire or wait till he's cleared by the Packers, in which case he'll end up signing with Green Bay. But next year, I have a hard time seeing JerMichael playing anywhere other than Green Bay, assuming he plays at all. What do you think on the comments on Finley and where he could play next season?
Jacob, you keep bringing it to things that I've already tweeted about this week, and I appreciate that because it makes for an easier transition. I said kind of the same thing that you just said. JerMichael Finley, as this continues to progress and as he continues to not meet with teams and as he continues to not pass physicals, I think it's either he's going to be a Green Bay Packer or he's going to be retired. And as a Packer fan, that's great. We're either going to have JerMichael Finley or nobody is. As a human being and someone who actually kind of likes JerMichael Finley, it sucks because I want him to have decent opportunities, you know, to continue his career if he wants to. I know that it's been made very public that he has an insurance checkout, or, you know, an insurance policy on his career, on his ability to play football for more money than I would ever need to, you know, live for the rest of my life. But I think the guy loves playing football, and I think that obviously his potential for earnings as a football player is higher than $10 million, given that he's not very old. I agree, though. I really do. I think that at this point, if he really is 2 months away from passing a physical, possibly passing a physical, teams are going to have their tight end situations figured out. I love JerMichael Finley, but nobody is going to disregard tight end in the draft and disregard tight end in post-draft free agency so that they can wait and see if maybe JerMichael Finley will pass their team's physical. It's just not realistic. So I honestly think that he's either going to have to retire or have to at least sit out a year, or he's going to be a Green Bay Packer.
Yeah, I agree. So that's what we're going to go with. It's he's a Packer or he retires. And that concludes the Behind the Bench series, or segment for the evening, rather. And now we're going to move to our draft series. Last week, we talked about defensive linemen and outside linebackers. This week, we're talking about inside linebackers, which happens to be a big Packers need. And there's two particular inside linebackers that are, well, one of them's a true inside linebacker. One of them, there's some debate as to where he could or should play. The one that's a true inside linebacker, that's C.J. Mosley from Alabama. I believe that is a Ross Uglum favorite as well as my own. And the other one that is getting some looks as a first-round pick is Ryan Shazier from Ohio. And that would be the team named the Buckeyes. I am just a bitter Michigan Wolverines fan that refuses to call them by their real name. So Ryan Shazier from Ohio is what we're going with. Ross, what are your opinion on the first round? I know that there's a lot of debate now between those two players as far as, especially with the health concerns with C.J. Mosley, who do you think is the better fit for Green Bay, or do you think that maybe Ryan Shazier fits a little bit better in the Clay Matthews type of position with his speed?
I tell you what, this health stuff sort of drives me insane, and I know that sounds crazy coming from a fan of a team that once drafted Justin Harrell, but if you're talking about health problems, minor health issues that have been affecting a guy's ability to work out or a guy's availability in a pro day situation to get ready for What is a selection meeting? That's what this is in the draft. This is not a actual competition. It just doesn't worry me. Like with Eddie Lacy's toe, well, whoopty freaking do. The draft was in April. He didn't need to be ready to go until August. He was ready to go. He was the offensive rookie of the year. For me, there is no debate. I am pro C.J. Mosley. I don't think Ryan Shazier is a bad player. I don't. But I think C.J. Mosley is everything that the Packers defense needs. And I've been on this podcast and on Twitter and on PackersTalk.com banging this drum as hard as I possibly can. And I think that if C.J. Mosley is available at 21, the Packers should sprint up to the podium and hand his name in. He's physical. He makes plays in the backfield. And more important than anything else, he's fantastic in coverage. The Packers have had, and I referenced Bill Johnson earlier, and I'm going to do it again. The Packers have had a soft underbelly of the defense where checkdowns to running backs, passes to the tight end, passes to fullbacks, anything short and in the middle has been disastrous because we just haven't had inside linebackers in this 3-4 that can cover anybody. And C.J. Mosley is absolutely spectacular in coverage. I think I remember a tweet from Brian Caribou early on in the evaluation process saying that watching C.J. Mosley's tape, he does not remember a linebacker that could cover quite as fluidly as Mosley. I think that has to be the number one guy on the Packers board overall, and he's definitely my number one linebacker. As far as other guys that I'd be comfortable with, I think you and I discussed a little bit pre-show that my number one guy is Mosley, and if it's not Mosley, I'd prefer one of the two safeties. Now, if all three of those guys are gone, and Eric Ebron from North Carolina is gone, I would want to trade down. But if we don't trade down, Ryan Shazier would be a fine selection. I think that he's a little bit undersized, and he would have to go inside and make a little bit of a position switch because he is a true outside linebacker in a 4-3, but he's not big enough to play outside in a 3-4. Hitty is very athletic, is also very good in coverage, and is an effective blitzer from areas on the field that would actually be inside linebacker of a 3-4. I don't think it would be that difficult of a transition for him. In fact, I think he plays the same position in Ohio State's defense that A.J. Hawk did. But I think he's probably a better athlete. As far as guys that I'm comfortable with later on, if we do go a different position, like safety in the first round, I like Chris Borland as a poor man's Luke Kuechly. I think that he's not the athlete that Shazier or Mosley are, but I think he's always in the right place. I think he's a very sure tackler. And I'm going to try and think of some other, real white guy things to think about Chris Borland. I don't know, but what I'm trying to get at is that I think he'd be a good fit. Another guy I really like is Shane Scove out of Stanford. I think he's a heck of a player, and I would be very comfortable with him in round two. Other than that, I really probably would want them to wait until round three and maybe snag a guy like Christian Jones out of Florida State, who's just a huge human being for an inside linebacker at 6'3", 240, or maybe even the kid out of Michigan State, Max Bolla, I think is his name, maybe a little bit later on in the draft. I think that he is a poor man's Chris Borland, who is a poor man's Luke Kuechly. So, you can take that for what it is, but I think the Packers have to address inside linebacker in this draft because it was made pretty clear that Brad Jones just isn't the answer next to A.J. Hawk, who isn't much of an answer himself.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that you mentioned most of the guys I like. I guess one more name that I will add is Yamin Smallwood from the University of Connecticut. I watched this guy play against Michigan, and he was all over the field. That wasn't the only big game that he had. I think he just makes plays. I think he's good in the middle of that defense. One other name, kind of controversial whether or not he could play inside, but that's Kyle Van Noy from BYU. couple, I mean, you mentioned guys like Skov, Max Bulov, Chris Borland, I do like, not as much as some people up here do, obviously, but, you know, people up here are Badgers fans. That just seems to go hand in hand, and I get it. But I also said last week that we need to cut that as far as thinking those things. But Borland is a nice prospect. I would say he's more of a broke man's Luke Kuechly than a poor man, but I'm splitting hairs there. Inside linebacker, I agree with you, though. It's Mosley 1, and then a bit of a drop-off, and then Shazer 2, and then you get into your guys like Borland and Skov and Smallwood and some of the other guys that we've mentioned. But I think that if C.J. Mosley is available, let's just say dream scenario, C.J. Mosley is available at 21, and so is Calvin Pryor, Hashawn Clinton-Dix, and Eric Ebron. I understand that's not likely at all, but just for the hell of it, let's say hypothetically those four are available. I know I've been talking about Calvin Pryor a lot, and I know that the safety position is a big need for Green Bay, but if that were the case, C.J. Mosley has to be the pick, in my opinion. They've got all this versatility up front. They need a chase linebacker to chase down guys like Colin Kaepernick, get some speed in the middle of their defense. You mentioned the soft underbelly and talking about checkdowns. One play that always sticks out in my head, 2011, now this is a while ago still, but 2011, the Packers are playing the New Orleans Saints, and it's 14-0 Green Bay. It's the first game at Lambeau after the Packers won the Super Bowl, so I was there, and it was a great atmosphere, best game I've ever been to, easily. But Drew Brees lines up in shotgun, and they move Darren Sproles into the slot, and I'm a big believer of this theory that if I see something, then that NFL quarterback definitely sees it too. What I saw was A.J. Hawk isolated on Darren Sproles. And I turned right to my buddy and said, if we don't get a sack, this is going for a big game. Well, Clay Matthews was a split second late. It wasn't a sack, and Darren Sproles ran for 30 yards up the middle of the field. A.J. Hawk wasn't even close to him. Those are the kind of plays, again, it was just a little 5 to 7 yard pass, but it turns into a 30-yard gain because the linebackers just can't run. Tight ends, Vernon Davis kills the Packers. It seems like every time they play each other, it's almost automatic that he's a touchdown. Which is why I tend to play him in my fantasy football leagues against Green Bay. But tight ends that can play up the seam, they kill Green Bay. Vernon Davis is one example. Jimmy Graham plays well against, well, pretty much everybody, but has good games against the Packers especially. Those dynamic tight ends, dump offs to the fullback, running back plays. I mean, you could see Matt Forte. Matt Forte always plays well against Green Bay, especially in the passing game. Maybe not necessarily the run game, but the pass game. The Packers need an inside linebacker that can cover somebody. C.J. Mosley is that. I know I mentioned that I have some bias against Shazer because of where he goes to school, and I hate that university with a passion. But he would be a good player. It's just I can't find a way to justify picking him over C.J. Mosley, even with his fast 40 time. I think the Underwear Olympics, known as the Combine. Something funny from today. I will mention, today, obviously, we're recording on a Thursday night. Johnny Manziel's pro day was today. And I've got friends that have told me for 2+ weeks, obviously, I'm a big Johnny Manziel fan. I've mentioned that several times on this show. They've mentioned they don't like him. They don't think he should go number one, things of that nature. He has a good pro day today, which is what should happen. I mean, I know he wore pads, which is kind of a big deal, but there's no defense out there, and he's being chased by brooms. Big whoop. He has a big pro day. I got all three of those friends of mine texting me saying he should go number one overall, best quarterback in the draft, things of that nature. That's ridiculous to me. I think that one rule that needs to be applied in this pre-draft process is just very simply put, game tape always wins out. Watch these guys on tape. When I watch these guys on tape, Mosley's better than Shazer, and it's not that close. It's not a huge gap, but it's not very close either. Now, after concluding our draft series, next week, Ross, we're talking cornerbacks, right?
No, I think we're talking outside linebackers.
Oh, that's right, outside, because we only did defensive linemen last week. That's right.
Correct.
So, outside linebackers next week, so there will be some names there. The Packers will be in the market for outside linebackers, I think. I don't think with this elephant defensive end that they're going to go with Clay Matthews and then Nate Palmer and Andy Malumba, but we'll discuss that more when next week hits. Now we're going to move on to our signature segment of the show. Ross, you have the floor.
Well, I want to talk about guys, once again, like Bill Johnson, that are poo-pooing the Peppers signing. First of all, why are you trying to kill everybody's buzz? And secondly, in all seriousness, you know, financially it was not a big commitment. Very little guaranteed. In fact, people are basically saying this is a one-year, $3.5 million deal. $3.5 million guaranteed, a one-year, $8 million deal. I do realize there is a little bit of the dead money if this does flop and he's not on the team in year two, but it's just not a very big commitment that the Packers are making to Peppers. Where he goes off and where I think a lot of people are really concerned is the way that they're going to use him, and that, you know, he thinks, or they think that he is going to be lost in coverage and blah, blah, blah. Well, here's the thing. The Packers aren't going to use him in coverage. They know that that's not where he's going to be most effective, and they're going to use him in this elephant end position. He's wanted to play in a 3-4 and come from different angles. Since he talked his way out of Carolina in 2009, he just ended up signing the biggest deal in Chicago. I think that whether or not this works, the fact that it's going to cause this scheme change, and it really is showing a determination from Ted Thompson that this is a season in which the Packers are going to, you know, quote-unquote, go for it, are just all positive things. I think everybody needs to just relax and kind of leave things up to these two guys that have led us to three straight division titles, and, you know, that people that are seniors in college were only freshmen the last time we won a Super Bowl under this administration. You know, it hasn't been that long. These guys know what they're doing. It's not like they dropped off the table after the Super Bowl. I mean, look at what happened to the Baltimore Ravens. They immediately didn't make the playoffs after their Super Bowl victory. So I think that the sustained success that these guys have had together would probably just lead me to trust them. And so all this hemming and hawing about the Peppers signing, you're going to want to cut that.
I will agree with that. And one thing that I think we always try to do when it comes to a signing is we want to grade it. And you always see that right away. As soon as a draft pick is made, there's a grade on it. Well, I'll give you one example from last year. The Chicago Bears received a pretty low grade for drafting Kyle Long. And I can tell you after seeing that guy up close, that guy's a freaking stud. That guy's going to be a hell of a guard for them for the next 10 to 15 years. So what your premise, I have to agree with completely. Everybody wants to jump to conclusions right away, and I don't think it's possible with a signing like this because Peppers is changing positions, and the Packers are doing some different things with their scheme. Now, they said right up front that he was going to play a 3-4 outside linebacker in the traditional sense of the word. Then I could understand some hemming and hawing, but the Packers clearly have some different plans with this elephant position and many other things we discussed tonight. So, Ross, I agree with you completely, as usual, on anything that is not related to, well, pretty much just basketball in general, not just college, but the pros too. Anyways, moving on from that, that's going to do it for today's show. Next week, like we said, we'll be discussing outside linebackers in our draft series and all sorts of different Packers news. Maybe they'll sign another player. Maybe they'll have some draft news come out. We don't know yet. But that's going to do it. And be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers podcasts and writing. Until then, I am Jacob Westendorf. You can follow me on Twitter, at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow the show, at From the Benches. And you can follow Ross, at Ross Uglum. And our other esteemed co-host who could not make the show tonight, Ryan Hilsland. Ryan, you can follow him at Hilsland358. Until next time, we are From the Benches.
Hey, Ted Thompson. Chris Clemens.
And there you have Ross's sales pitch.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.